saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes, great for any project. Whether you're pouring a walkway, a concrete slab, or setting a post, view our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Moon in. You all right? I hope you are. I genuinely hope you are. Oh, what, me? Yeah, I'm all good. I'm a good time. We've got a guest today. You might have seen, if you've seen the thumbnails on the thumbnail, right, Harry?
Yeah.
The good professor. None other than Professor Edward Dutton. So we'll speaking to him a bit later. Probably in 10, 20 minutes, maybe half hour from now, something like that. We'll have him on, get his input. You are the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers. Thank you for joining me. And sisters. Without you, it's not a thing, is it? It's really not a thing. It's just ticked 1 minute past eight, British summer time. Wednesday, the 15th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Good, okay. And Lammy is my Kang in the chat said, burgundy suit and red tie before I came on air. How do you know that? How do you know that, Lammy, is my Kang? How did you... It's worrying. You can just see. Okay. Should we just get into it then this morning? What have we got? What's in the news? What's the legacy corporate mainstream media banging on about this morning? Lying by omission. Don't mention Ireland, yeah? Don't mention all the fuel protests in Ireland and then sending in the army and the police to try and put down normal people that are just trying to survive here. Don't mention that, right, guys? Yeah. UK economy takes triple hit and cheers Timmy. That's Timothy Chalamet. That's in reference to. There's one headline that does that, that goes with that. So, okay. UK economy takes triple hit. Let's have a look. The Eye paper then. A lot of the stories are about the UK economy and defence spending and just economy stuff. So, UK economy takes triple hit from Iran war, says the Eye paper. Lower growth, fewer jobs, and higher cost of living. Even higher cost of living. Even fewer jobs. Lower growth. We haven't got any growth, essentially. They have to measure it in a very, very specific way to even make the argument that there's any growth. We can't have much lower growth. So recession. We're looking at a recession then. Okay. Say that then. All right. Impact of Trumpflation starting to become clear for UK. Petrol, energy and mortgage costs set to keep climbing. They could cut tax on petrol, couldn't they? Could do that for us. Like in Ireland. I mentioned the Ireland stuff, didn't I? That's one of the things they've been lying by omission about for quite a few days now. If you don't know. I did say, actually, there was one thing. I think it was in the Sun, was it? In the Sun? Let's have a quick look. Let's have a quick look for you. I think it was... Yeah. Finally, something in the Sun. Fueling the fury inside petrol price protests, paralysing, say that 10 times fast, Ireland as fuming drivers gridlock country over costs. So will Britain be next? Yeah, in Ireland. For days and days and days, since the end of last week, isn't it? Or since the weekend. Loads of people are protesting in Ireland with getting their lorries and their tractors to block roads and even like petrol depot places over the fact that their petrol may run out or is beginning to run out and that it's insanely expensive. And when they start airing their grievances, they start talking about migration as well, because it's even worse, it's even further accelerating in Ireland, starting with a much smaller population, cram a few million in there. It's much more accelerated, it seems, or is, than even in Great Britain. But nominally about petrol prices and things. And they're asking their government, who's part of the EU, right? The Republic of Ireland is in the EU. Asking them, could you just reduce the giant taxes you've got on fuel so we can afford it? Would you mind? And their government's like, no, and we'll send in the army. If you keep blocking roads, it's the army you get. Or if not that, just full riot police. Oh. Nice. We're asking for something very, very reasonable. Okay. So you're going to play it. Fine. Okay. The mainstream media, at least in Britain, on Fleet Street. Don't want to talk about that. Don't want to mention that. Okay. Reeves, Rachel from Accounts, the idiot who's somehow the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Reeves accused of blocking defence spending, as welfare now accounts for £1 in every £4 spent by UK government. Mad, isn't it? There's one thing I saw not too long ago, last week, one data point, saying that we spend more on the welfare bill than we get in income tax. Of course, the Treasury gets revenues in all sorts of ways, not just income tax, of course, but still, it's a giant one, isn't it? It's one of the more giant things that brings money into the Treasury. We spend more more on welfare than that every year. Completely disastrous, completely suicidal, completely unsustainable numbers, isn't it? Or is it? It's over £300 billion a year or something like that. The defence, they want to up it to like another £2.5 billion a year. More, something like that. No, we can't find that, she says. Spend over £330 billion or something on welfare. We spend something like £4.6 billion a week on the NHS. A week. And the army, all the armed services together, asking for an extra £2.5 billion a year. £2.5 billion a year. And she's like, no, I can't do that. We need to spend it on people that are invading us and their healthcare. Completely insane. Completely insane. Okay. UK military chiefs are asked to find £3.5 billion in savings and prepare for war, as defence investment plan delayed again. The strategic defensive initiative plan thing they drew up. It's funny, isn't it, that the establishment, not funny, ha-ha, funny, maddening, that the establishment, the blob, whatever you want to call it, they're quite bellicose, aren't they? They're quite hawkish. It's really like they want a war with Russia. Feels like that, doesn't it? Extremely aggressive, but won't spend any money on defence. In fact, they're asking military chiefs to find ways to cut money to the tune of a few billion. And how does that make sense? It's mental, isn't it? Labour's pledge to build 1.5 million new homes under threat. Don't talk to me about it. It was absurd. It was a fiction from the moment it was said, wasn't it? It's under threat. That was never, ever, ever, ever going to happen. They weren't going to get close. They were never going to get close to building 1.5 million new homes. Angela Rayner, that was one of her things, wasn't it? Angela the Fridge Rayner. Big Bird. Yeah, 1.5 million new homes. You may as well say a trillion new homes. Britain's going to build 200 billion new homes. Just pie in the sky nonsense, isn't it? It's under threat. Yeah, it's under threat, yeah. British economy is forecast to rebound quicker in 2027. Don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. Okay. The Guardian. Ugh. Yeah. Don't want. Look at this. Look at this chump. Look at this dungaree-wearing, smelly commie. What would it be like to be a tradwife for a month? Don't worry about it, love. Don't worry about it. Okay. Iran conflict could spark recession with Britain hit hardest in G7, says the International Monetary Fund. Probably, yeah. Can believe it. Yeah. Trump says peace talks may restart in 2 days. So a little bit all about the blockade, Mr. Trump's blockade. There are a fair few stories that, that some ships are just sailing through his blockade anyway. Like at least four, one report I said this morning, at least four, like big, massive, those giant oil tankers. Like one, at least one Chinese one. China just being like, no. No, we bought our oil or gas, one way or another. We bought that from Iran legitimately. We are now sailing it back to China, thank you. That's sort of calling the US Navy's bluff in a way. It's like, what are you going to do? Stop us? You're going to blow us out of the water? You're probably not, are you? So we're just going to... Iran's letting us through the Straits of Hormuz, so we're just doing it. So I imagine Trump and Rubio and Hegseth, they don't want a giant international diplomatic incident. They don't want a naval engagement, really, do they, with a Chinese tanker? I mean, it's not that they can't win that. But politically, it looks really bad, doesn't it? It looks really terrible. You don't really want a big incident with China, do they? Again, not that they couldn't handle it, but it's not ideal, is it? It's not wanted at this stage to escalate the whole thing in that manner. So at least a few big tankers just running the US blockade. We'll see how that starts playing out. Okay. The US aren't sending many of their ships. I thought they might on Monday. Sending their ships into the Straits of Hormuz. They're sort of sitting outside of it in like the Gulf of Aden there. Sitting outside watching what comes in and out. Okay. UK lacking urgency in moving to war footing. You don't need to be on a war footing, but okay, if you guys insist you should be, and also you're not actually doing it, though. It's mad, isn't it? This government's mad. We need to be on a war footing. Mr. Putin's an imminent threat, a clear and present danger. The Russians. But we're not actually going to spend money on that or actually move to a war footing. We're not actually going to do that, though. Crazy SOBs from start to finish, from top to bottom. Okay, The Mirror. Something about Oasis. Okay, don't care. Reeves' fury at Trump. Oh, I bet he's shaking in his boots. I bet he doesn't know what to do with himself. I bet he's sweating buckets at the monumental amount of pressure Rachel Reeves is putting on him. No exit plan, no idea. Chancellor blasts US over Iran war shambles and economic fallout. Rachel Reeves has blasted Donald Trump. Donald Trump blasted. He's on blast. Okay. Rachel Reeves has blasted Donald Trump's chaotic war in Iran, saying it is hitting British families in the pocket. Well, it is. I mean, that is true. Especially if you're driving diesel, right? Price of food. Mad. Go to Tesco's. Buy just normal food. Oh, it's like 2-3 times what it cost not very long ago. Just a few years ago. Want to buy a joint of pork or something? Way expensive. Way expensive. Toiletries. Why don't you go to Boots or something, just buy a few things you need. Oh, it's like £30. I've not really got anything here. These are not luxuries. Again, not crazy luxury items. They're items I need. I don't know how really poor people that are right on the edge of being able to afford things. It must be really scary. If things go up even more, it will be like depression times. Like wearing rags and stuff. Nearly. A million miles away from that. Okay. The Times, the venerable Times. Something about Harry and Meghan. Do not care about them. Do not care what they do or say anymore. I'm done. I was never particularly interested. But nowadays, like, come on. He is a real clown, isn't he? A buffoon. And she is highly obnoxious. Neither of them have got anything interesting to say, have they? That's the bottom line, right? I don't know about you guys, but I only ever watch content of people or listen to people that I think either they're interesting, they've got something of interest to say, or if they're funny, right? If you're not funny and or interesting, why would you ever listen to what they've got to say? Even if they're, you know, royals or statesmen or like A-listers or something, you know, like Robert De Niro. Oh, what's Robert De Niro's got to say about something? He's super famous. He's an A-lister. Don't care. No, I'm not interested. I'm not interested. I know that he's not got anything interesting or funny to say. So look at this. Look at that. Bring the picture back up, Harry. Look at his face. What a buffoon. Truly a buffoon. Okay. Signs of compromise as US and Iran hint at fresh peace talks. I don't buy that. That's miles away. What fresh peace talks? What hint? What signs of compromise? No. America need, and Israel need, Iran to give up their uranium enrichment program, and Iran won't do it. America and the United States need them to give up on their proxies, their regional allies, and they won't do it. Iran want America to stop all economic sanctions, and they won't do it. America's just blockaded all your ports. America's upped the like economic stranglehold on you now, if anything. Compromise. Yeah, right. Again, don't hold your breath at people out there. Ooh, hoping they'll get back round the table, make a deal. Yeah, not likely. Minister in Britain, minister calls for single-sex spaces to be more inclusive. Isn't that the point of a single-sex space, that it's explicitly exclusive? Is that not the whole point of that? Mental. Bridget Phillipson, MP. Mental. No, the whole point of a single-sex space, it's for women, isn't it? Like most men, most normal dudes in the changing room, walking around, tackle out, don't really care. Some woman walks into the men's changing room, you just be like, "Whoa, all right, love." You don't actually care. You don't feel scared. This is women, isn't it? It's for women. Women's single-sex spaces. Having men in women's single-sex spaces. That's the problem here, isn't it? That's the real thing. They need to be more inclusive, do they? No, they don't. No, they need to be explicitly exclusive. Women only. So what's she talking about there, Bridget Phillipson? They need to be more inclusive. Shut up, love. Gee, God. Haven't we been through this? Haven't we had quite a few years of this debate? Trump did a good thing, didn't he? To be fair to him, Trump. Remember when he first got in, he signed loads of executive orders straight off the bat? There's a bunch of those. No, men are not allowed to compete in women's sports. Men are not allowed in women's changing rooms and toilets and stuff. Brilliant. Simple. The crazy leftoid globalists screech about it for a day or two, and that's it. And then you get over it, and then that's it. They call you a bigot for a bit. Who cares about that? Fine. Job sorted. Job done. But our government, remember when David Lammy thought men could have a cervix? Remember that? Remember when Keir Starmer was asked to define a woman and couldn't really? Just couldn't. Okay. Reeves dashes hopes of boost to defence spending. Yeah, she's not interested in us being safe, is she? She'll talk war. The whole government and cabinet, they'll talk war. They'll be hawkish about war, but don't want to actually spend money on it. It's almost like, isn't it? It's almost as if they want to put us in as much danger and peril as they possibly can, isn't it? It's almost as though that's what they're doing. Chancellor plans rise of less than $2.5 billion a year, despite being warned Britain's, quote, safety is at peril by Lord Robertson, who used to be a NATO chief. Super, super senior military, UK military dude. He says, and he should know, we're in peril. Our actual safety is in peril at this point. All we're asking for is $2.5 billion. Again, you spend very nearly double that a week on the NHS. Spend well over 100 times more than that on welfare every single year. Well over. She's like, no, can't do it. Can't stretch to it. Best I can do is ask you guys to cut $3.5 billion. Chancellor plans rise of less than 2.5 billion. Meanwhile, here's a story on the ITV News. Meanwhile, UK to send 752 million pounds and 120,000 drones to Ukraine. All right. I see. I get it. I understand. We see you. Yep. Our safety is nowhere near the top of your priorities. Got it. Thanks. Oh, we've got to send 750 million pounds so Zelensky and his friends can and family can embezzle it. Great. Where did we ever have an audit of all the untold billions that has been sent to Ukraine? Did we ever have an audit of exactly where that money ended up and exactly what it was spent on? No. Has any of it ended up quite literally in the pockets of Zelensky, Zelensky's family, and other members of that government and his friends and things? Don't know. Don't ask that. You must be a Putin stooge if you're asking that question. What, you in the pay of the Kremlin? Why are you asking that? That's the level of the discourse, isn't it? So we can't spend an extra 2.5 billion on our military, but we will send 750 million and 120,000 drones to Ukraine on top of the billions we've already sent them for a war they can't win. Okay. The Daily Mail, complete globalist slop, trying to pretend it isn't. Something about Kate Garraway. Don't care about Kate Garraway. We cannot defend Britain with an ever-expanding welfare bill, says Lord Robertson. Not the Daily Mail's words, but those of the ex-Labour minister Starmer tasked with writing his defence review and who's now lost all confidence in dithering PM. Yeah, the dithering PM. In the Sun, I know the Sun's quite sloppy, but still. They were going, like, indefensible. We can't defend Britain if you keep splurging on benefits. Army of critics, tell Starmer, as forces starved of funding. Look at him, look. Trying to be serious, trying to be like he's some sort of serious politician. When, in fact, he is a traitor. Just endlessly acting against the interests of this nation. Mad, isn't it? Absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Everyone that voted Labour at the last election, well done. Thanks. Labour voters. Ugh. Labour voters. This day and age. Really? Really? All right. What have we got? Oh, the Metro. Ooh. The Metro. Metro, this is the thing about Cheers Timmy. Remember at the top of the show, Timmy. Timmy. There's Timothy Chalamet. Vacuous actor there. Hairbrained, know-nothing actor man. Timothy Chalamet. He criticised ballet and the opera. He said no one goes to the ballet or the opera anymore. I mean, very few people do. Opera used in the pre-modern period. Opera, for anyone who had any money, was massive. It was huge. Like how chariot racing was massive in the ancient world. It was the main thing, chariot racing. In the pre-modern world, in the 18th, 19th century, opera was big. Big stuff. But people don't go very much anymore, do they? He's not completely wrong there. And the ballet, you know. I've been to the opera once, or is it twice? Many, many, many moons ago now. But I've never been to a ballet. I've never been to a ballet. Never been in a relationship where she wanted to go to the ballet. So, and I'm not just going to the ballet. So, I'm into the opera. You can't understand it. It's nearly always in a foreign language, right? Usually in Italian or something. You can't understand it. Unless beforehand you've researched the story. You won't really know what's going on, basically. So, anyway. Timothy Chalamet said no one goes to the Ballet of the Opera, and apparently ticket sales have gone up slightly off of that. And the arts chief, some arts chief in Britain, has like thanked him. Go, thanks, cheers, like, you know, thanks for that. You've actually boosted our numbers. All right, bit of a nothing story, isn't it? Classic Metro slop, absolute slop. Can't believe I spent that much time on it, honest, to be honest. The Express, it's good paper. It's a good paper, The Express. They go with something a bit different. Former police officer urges the government to give injured 999 workers a medal. People that work for, you know, ambulance services that get assaulted or something, or quite more, much more often police officers that get wounded in the line of duty. Wake up, PM, and honour heroes hurt in line of duty. So, can't disagree with it. No problem with that. Does it really help, though? If you got terribly wounded in the... He was a cop. He was a copper. He got badly wounded, hurt, injured. In the line of duty. Does a little medal make much odds? Maybe it does. Maybe it does to them. I don't know. Perhaps it's the least they could do. I'm not going to pour cold water on this chap at all, but it won't make any real difference to you if you've got a little medal or not. Not a little medal, I don't know, I'm not trying to belittle it, but... All right, make up your own mind on that. Make up your own mind. The Financial Times, the FT, Wall Street bank earnings shatter records as traders thrive on Iran war volatility. Great. As everyone else gets poorer, quite literally and in real terms, Wall Street bankers, or the firms themselves anyway, record earnings. Because they know how to work volatility, right? They've got professional traders that know what they're doing. Bumper haul at JP Morgan, Citi and Wells, Citibank and Wells Fargo. JP Morgan and Citibank particularly are some of the two, well, not that Wells Fargo small, but Citibank, JP Morgan, giant bear moths of the financial world in terms of sort of assets under management. They're doing all right. They're all right. They're laughing it up. £25 billion in combined profits. Fears for consumer spending. Yeah, when you realise you're really poor and you haven't got enough money for everything you might like or need, then you stop spending money, don't you? Because you realise you're going to need it. All right, I'm getting some sort of signs that perhaps the good professor is... Harry, talk to me. Is coming on?
Yeah, we're ready.
Yeah, I can't hear. You've got to press the button before I can hear. Okay, I'm getting a thumbs up. Getting a thumbs up. I've got to wear headphones, because remember when Rupert Lowe, Obi-Wan Kenobi was on, there was a bit of an echo, wasn't there? So I've got to wear headphones. Boom, how about that? Shall I do a James O'Brien? My big jug ear, James O'Brien jug ear. No. All right. Stop mucking about. Actually, it genuinely does help to have one ear open so I can hear. Anyway, all right, Harry, bring on Dutton. Is he ready? Oh, there he is. Edward, how are you, sir?
Morning. Hello.
Great. Hello. the Lord Dutton, first Baron Dutton. How are you this morning? You're all right.
I'm okay. I'm admiring your ability to get up so early. I don't know how you manage it. You must be an extreme cave strategist or something like that. I don't know how you can manage getting up so early in the morning. Well, it's 2 hours. You're 2 hours back from me, so it's only 8:30 there.
Yeah. Well, as you get older. I'm middle-aged. We're about the same age, aren't we, I think? Middle-aged now. I just go to bed earlier. It's quite simple as that. I don't sit up till midnight, like, drinking and playing computer games anymore. I just go to bed a bit earlier.
What time do you go to bed?
Well, it depends, but, I mean, 10 is knocking it now. 10's a bit late for me, so 9, half 9, 10, something like that.
Oh, my goodness. No, I go to bed about midnight. And I used to go to bed about 2. Yeah. And
That's how I used
Well,
to do it.
that's 9:30. I think I used to. That was kind of the time that you'd be sent to bed when you were maybe sort of 9 years old.
Yeah, some good films haven't even started on TV yet by that point, right? It's like
no, that was there was there was there was it was like oh, it's a Sunday night and you've got school the next day and Melvin Bragg is on, and should you consider, is it probably time to go to bed yet, or can you just watch a bit of Melvin Bragg or a bit of Newsnight?
It's like you have a bath, like weekday, have a bath, you could watch Red Dwarf maybe, and then straight to bed, 8:30. Okay, so I wonder if we could get a few takes from you today about everything's in the news. That's what this show is. So I guess first of all, probably the biggest thing, what's your thoughts and feelings about Iran and the blockade and Mr. Trump and Israel and everything that's going on? What's your, in the broadest sense, what's your thoughts and feelings on all that stuff?
It's funny you asked me about that because it's the one thing that I try to avoid thinking about,
Oh,
because
fair enough.
I just think it's potentially so awful that it reminds me. I've got that sort of foreboding that I had during COVID when COVID started, and I thought, hang on, this could get really, really bad, and in fact, so bad that although in general I tend to feel myself a bit of a contrarian that like to speak out against what we're told to believe and what we're told we must believe and not think about. This is so bad. This is the government just completely losing control. And so best to sort of shut up about this, because it's just this really is things falling apart. That's what I remember thinking when COVID started, that they don't know what's going on. They don't know really what's caused it, and this could just could get terrible. And it's the same thing here because we're completely reliant on oil. And so, if we and we're more reliant on oil even than we were in the 70s when there was the oil crisis, the OPEC oil crisis. We were really, really, really for absolutely everything. And we use transport a lot more than we used to use it then. We don't even have really, most people don't even have things like fireplaces, functioning fireplaces in their houses. So if we lose oil, we're in serious trouble. I understand that they've got very serious problems now in certain countries with petrol. So in Australia, there's now serious problems with enough petrol. In Slovenia, they're rationing petrol. So
In
this,
Ireland, there's all sorts of problems in Ireland right now. Sorry, carry on.
yes, I hear it's resulted in kind of rioting in Ireland and stuff like this that's not really being reported in the UK for some reason, possibly because they're concerned that this is the same thing will happen in the UK. If we can't get enough petrol, there will be a there will be a complete loss of control, anarchy. So that's why I haven't thought about it as much as I perhaps should, because I just think it's a terrible, terrible possibility. It's a really, it really is a marker of civilizational decline. If we can't get enough petrol, that's like not getting enough bronze in the Bronze Age or iron in the Iron Age.
So it's so concerning, disquieting to you that you don't want to look straight at it, sort of thing.
No, I can't quite believe it's being allowed to happen. Like in the same way that with the Ukraine war, which you were discussing just before you tuned me in, we were so reliant on Ukraine for food, and so then it was the huge producer of our food in Britain's food anyway, with the result that British food prices have rocketed up since 2022 to an insane degree. I don't think it's a coincidence that now you have to have electronic tags on basic food items now in many UK shops. So
That is crazy.
that just shouldn't have happened. That's just something that it shows you that the terrible fragility of the system that we live under, this very fragile system, which is extremely complicated and there and stretched and therefore fragile. And so if one thing goes wrong, then it all unravels. Like a spider's web, and it's the same here. This is if this carries on, if this isn't sorted out, then there won't be enough petrol, which will mean no flo which will mean the end of aviation. It will mean the end of transportation, of food, the end of everything, and prices will skyrocket. So it's not good.
You're in Finland, aren't you? So I wonder, whilst I've got someone that here on the line that knows all about Finland, can I ask you a little question about NATO? Everything that's going on with NATO and Trump talking in the last few days again about possibly the US pulling out of NATO. What's the thoughts and feelings of Finns and Finland? Because it's countries like that that will actually be most affected. Have you got your ear to the ground on that, all that sort of thing in Finland? Do they talk about it much?
I'm not aware that it hasn't come to. It hasn't come to my attention of late that they've been particularly discussing any concern about the collapse of NATO.
Okay.
No.
Oh, okay. No. Oh, that's interesting.
But they got involved in NATO because obviously they're on the border with Russia, and there's the concern about being invaded. There's no general chat about a fear about the collapse of NATO in the news. No.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought they might be.
There is massive concern about Russia, and concern about drones, and drones getting into Finland and things like this. So, for example, a recent headline was about a drone warhead being detonated in southeast Finland because there's no major discussion about the possible collapse of NATO. I think people believe Trump. It's like this whole thing when Trump said he's going to invade Greenland. And in the end, he got what he wanted, and so he backed down. I don't think he's really going to withdraw from NATO.
Oh, right, okay. But are Finns, just one last question on Finland. Is there a lot of people there genuinely fear that Russia might at any moment actually, you know, start rolling tank divisions onto Finnish territory, you know, whole battalions of infantrymen and, you know, the whole nine yards. Is that a genuine fear? Or
no, not really.
All right. Okay. I thought not. Because sometimes war hawks here say that, you know, people in Poland or Belarus or Finland or Estonia or Latvia or whatever, that they're all sitting there terrified of Mr. Putin, that they're terrified the Kremlin's just about to annihilate them. But I don't feel like that is actually true.
I think first of all, with NATO, they like to think that they're protected by NATO. They're probably not, but they like to think that they are. But secondly, I don't know if it's to do with the being a rich country and decadence or whatever. But I know there's no widespread fear here of this country being invaded by Russia. There's deep hatred of Russians, particularly among older people. They really, really, really hate Russians can't stand the Russians. But I don't think there's any genuine fear of imminent invasion or invasion at all.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Good to know. Okay. That's enough about Finland. Thanks for letting us know that, because it's difficult to get a perspective on something like that unless someone's actually there or living there. Okay, so back to the papers and what's in the news today. A lot of it is all about the economy and, like, British spending, i.e. various things, various data points to talk about. The idea that we spend so much on welfare and the NHS and relatively little on defence, and yet our establishment, the blob, whatever you want to call it, is really quite hawkish quite a lot of the time. Send lots and lots of money and materiel and resources to Zelensky, but yet don't seem to be able to want to or prepared to spend money, a relatively small amount in the scheme of things, on our defence. I don't know if you heard much of the show earlier, but, you know, spending hundreds of billions on welfare and the NHS and can't muster like 2.5 billion for spending, despite being very, very bellicose. What's all your thoughts and feelings on that whole subject?
Well, it's just this broader attitude towards life, isn't it? That I think that we're so used to everything being okay. We're so used to everything being fine. We're so used to nothing bad happening. That we no longer plan for a future in which bad things might happen. Another thing you could argue is we're so used to living under freedom that we no longer plan for a future or a possibility where tyrants might become in charge of our country. And that's why we've lost so much freedom in the UK over the last 30 years in terms of freedom of speech and things like that, because we simply didn't we passed laws and we didn't plan, like the Public Order Act 1986, and we didn't plan for the possibility that a tyrannical anti-freedom government and tyrannical anti-freedom culture would take over and then would use those laws to suppress people. We assumed that there would be reasonable, democratic, freedom-loving people in charge, which stopped being the case. But we were so used to having freedom that we didn't plan for the possibility of losing it, which America, of course, has done because it has these constitutional laws and that stop make it very difficult to destroy certain freedoms. And it's the same, I think, with things like military spending. If you're so used to peace, then you assume there's going to be peace, then for then you don't you you don't plan for the possibility of war. And then when war does come, which it inevitably will, because these things tend to move in cycles, then you're in serious trouble, and you're not prepared, and you should be. What you should be doing, logically, it's like the idea of the old cliche we were talking earlier about going to bed early and things like, when you were a kid, we'll talk about saving money for a rainy day, not splurging away your money when you have it, saving it up when you might want something like a new WWF wrestling figure or like the big wrestling ring thing. Or whatever it happens to be that you could see in the Argos catalogue, and it's the same. It's the same here that you have peace for such a long time. You're so used to it, you become decadent, and so you think, well, let's spend money on our standard of living now, so that we all have a high, or at least some people have a high standard of living, and we won't spend things on the vague possibility in the future that seems unlikely it will ever happen. There will be a war, or there will be conflict, and then when it comes, we don't have it. Even after World War One, bizarrely, considering how close at hand World War One was, they started to disarm under when in the wake of the war or whatever, when Churchill was in government in the 20s, they started to disarm Britain, such that when there then was a war, we weren't sufficiently prepared. Whereas, of course, Germany was exactly the opposite. Germany was arming itself. Throughout the 30s, in preparation for a war, it was spending a lot of its money, and so that's it's just a fundamental decadent thing that we've done. That we, if you, we assume there will be peace, and there isn't. It all we assume that the good times will last forever, that the strawberries and cream will last forever, and they never do. But when they're there, we do things like Gordon Brown did, like selling off all our gold at low prices, and all of these kinds of decadent things, and then finally we're paying for it now.
Yeah. Some historians have called it the long peace. Of course, that's quite a European or American sort of perspective. There's certain places in the world that have, of course, haven't been peaceful since 1945. Nonetheless, broadly speaking, the long peace. And yeah, you describe it as decadent, yeah, or short-sighted. And you mentioned there throughout history, sort of cycles of history. Many historians, like Carlyle and Spengler, many have talked about the sort of shape of history, the cycles that if you think the idea that history has come to an end, that there will never be wars again. No, history decides when it's come to an end, and it hasn't. It never will.
It will never come to an end. That was the whole idea of Francis Fukuyama. The whole idea of the end of history. Liberal democracy has won out, and we're going to be happy forever. And it's obviously complete nonsense. It's completely with everything else that's ever happened. I mean, that's what it looked like in the what it looked like in the, I don't know, sort of circa 1900 or something like that, or 1890. Was that history had come to an end, and that everything was going to be okay in Britain. There was never going to be another war, serious war, obviously colonial wars, but a major war involving Britain, as there had been 100 years earlier with Napoleonic War and so forth. And then, of course, within 10 years or so, there was a huge war. So it doesn't work like that, but it feels like that when you haven't had war and you haven't had serious natural stresses and you haven't had death and you haven't had whatever for a very, very long time. Then it feels like that, and that's when you make these decadent decisions to invest money in nonsense and in just luxuries, rather than naturally planning for the possibility that there won't be a luxury thing. It's just natural human. It's natural human psychology, and it won't ever change. You're right.
Okay, one moment, Ed. Harry, Harry, I couldn't hear Ed for the last couple of moments there. Could you make sure I could hear him? I don't know what happened there. Sorry about that, Ed. Hopefully we could. There's no more technical issues. Okay. Would you mind saying something else for me just to check I can actually hear you? No, that's not coming through my headphones, Harry. Sorry about this, Ed. I don't know if it just cut out in the middle of what you're saying. I didn't touch anything. I imagine you didn't touch anything. Well, okay. So I'm sorry. I can't actually hear you at this moment. We might have to. It's not coming through. I don't know if the people out there on the actual stream can hear it. But Harry, you've got a few seconds to sort it out. Otherwise, sorry about that, Ed. I suppose you can still talk. I think the people on the stream can still hear you. Just let us know next time you might be in Britain, if I could actually possible have you come in physically sit with us.
Just take the earphones off.
Yeah, no, I can't hear you. Harry, I'm sorry about that, Ed. We'll have to let you go, I'm afraid, because I just simply can't hear you. I'm sorry about that. It's a technical issue. Yeah, your frown says it all.
Shall I come out and come back in again?
There you go. Apologies about that. I really can't tell you what happened. Bit annoying about that. Anyway, a little bit of Ed Dutton. What did you get? 15, 20 minutes of Ed Dutton? We'll have to apologise to him for basically just cutting him off there, but it's coming through the headphones and then nothing happened. I can only apologise to you guys, the glorious band, the chosen few, for sticking with us. I really couldn't tell you what happened there. It's going to have to be an inquiry. I was promised it was fixed. All right, let's just move on, shall we? It's already gone 2:45. So should we just have a look at what happened on this day in history before we get to the Rumble Rants and the Super Chats? I like doing that. You guys seem to like that as well. What happened on this day in history? April the 15th, down through the centuries. What happened of note? Okay, on this day, in 1755, Samuel Johnson's A Dictionary of the English Language is published in London. Someone on the State of Politics, my show with Mr. H. Reviews, State of Politics, asked me what my favourite Blackadder episode is. And I've got at least half a dozen which I think are brilliant. I like them all. And in the end, I said, perhaps my favourite episode is in the third season of Blackadder, where Robbie Coltrane plays Samuel Johnson and Lord Byron is in it and stuff. Love that episode. Oh, anyway, the real Samuel Johnson is dictionary. It's really important. If you've ever read anything from the Middle Ages or even from the 17th, 18th century, even into the 19th century, you might notice people play fast and loose with spelling. Spelling just simply wasn't standardised. You could put E's on the end of things and no one's going to say, that's not how you spell it, because it wasn't standardised. So, okay. 1755, Samuel Johnson's dictionary. The dictionary. Very important, starting to get us towards some proper spelling. Okay, on this day in 1861... the Federal Army of 75,000 volunteers is mobilised by Abe Lincoln at the start of the American Civil War. Again, got loads of content all about the American Civil War. And of course, at the very beginning of this American Civil War, the Confederacy had a few successes. People in the North thought it would be a cakewalk, one big push, and we'll defeat the Confederacy on the field, and it'll be all over. First Battle of Bull Run. Well, anyway, in the end, ultimately, the Union had to put together an army of, what, like 400,000 or more? Three or four different giant army corps of hundreds of thousands apiece. Wasn't a case of just some quick 75,000 volunteers, quick push, one big battle, one big decisive afternoon, and it's all over. Afraid not. Unfortunately not. Okay. On this day in 1874, first Impressionist art exhibition opens in Paris, featuring Monet, Degas, Renoir, Pizarro and Morisot. There you go. I quite like the Impressionists. I've done content about art history, some with Josh, Big Josh Firm, on his show he had, Contemplations. I've done a couple of different long-form bits of content talking about art and art history. And I like sort of classical art. I like things that are very, very high quality, that's almost sort of photo quality. So, you know, the classic, even Renaissance masters, that's my sort of taste. You know, something like Titian or Michelangelo or something. But of the Impressionists, I don't mind some of the Impressionist stuff where you're deliberately not trying to make it photo quality. I don't mind some Impressionism. That's about as far as I'll go. Okay. You know, like Monet's got some nice things, in my opinion. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but there you go. Okay. On this day in 1877... world's first home telephone is installed in Somerville, Massachusetts, at the house of somebody called Charles William Jr. Okay, didn't know that. That one's new to me. That really is a tiny, tiny footnote of history, isn't it? The world's first telephone. Some random dude's house in Massachusetts. Okay, and on this day, they talked about the Titanic yesterday, didn't they? That it first hit the iceberg late at night on the 14th of April. And then by 20 past two the following morning, on the 15th of April, it goes down. With the loss of most people on board. Some survived, didn't they? There were some survivors, but a loss of between 1,490 and 1,635 lives. Pretty bad. I mean, it was the biggest, it was supposed to be the biggest liner of the day. So yeah, giant death toll. Quite a horrible way to go as well, I think. Drowning in icy water in the dark. Terrifying. Perhaps not all that painful, you know, nowhere near as painful as being burnt alive or something, but kind of terrifying death. Okay, all right. Shall we have a look at the Rumble Rants and the Super Chats? Let me do this with my mic so I can see the right side of my screen. All right, what have we got? Oh, Harry, is that meant to be on the screen, this big black square? Get rid of that. Is that what's on the screen? Okay, I shall plough on with the Rumble Rants. We've got Global Church History in at number one. Still in at number one. Okay, Global Church History says, today, in 73 AD, Masada fell to the Romans. That's a very interesting bit of history. 73 AD, sort of the first Roman Jewish war in 73 AD. The Romans had won a lot, basically, and the last pockets of Jewish revolt held out in a hill fort, very very difficult hill with fortification settlement on top of it. Very very difficult hill to get up for any sort of attackers. Masada. And in the end, the Romans built a giant slope. Giant, giant earthwork slope, massive, in order to get up there and their siege engines and whole legions up there in one go. The Jewish people of the day just didn't think the Romans would do that, didn't have the logistical ability to do that. But they did, and in the end, Masada. Josephus talks all about it. We had someone question the other day, someone asking about Josephus. Josephus was actually there. He survived. Very, very. Oh, and at the very end, a lot of the Jews killed themselves rather than be a mass suicide. Rather than be captured by the Romans and, you know, probably executed, crucified or whatever. Rather than that, they killed themselves. But Josephus survived that and wrote an account about it. Okay. On this day in 1071, the Normans took Bari, which was the last of Roman Italy. Yeah, a lot of people might not know. Well, anyone that knows their history will know. But the Normans, i.e. from Normandy... Well, originally from Scandinavia, aren't they? The ancestors of the Normans. King Rollo and stuff. But from northern France, basically, went and had massive conquests in Italy and Sicily and all over the place. Yeah, a lot of Norman conquests in Italy and Sicily. So there you go. And the last one you said, in 1493, Columbus returned to Seville after his first crossing of the Atlantic. He actually crossed the Atlantic multiple times in his life after the first time. After he showed it could be done, people did it immediately, started doing it immediately, or in the next generation, rather, a lot. And Christopher Columbus himself did it, what, 3 or is it 4 times? Crossed the Atlantic and then came back again. So that'd be the first time. He said Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. So he came back in 1493. There you go, interesting. Okay, what else we got? 14 Barber, morning, Bo, morning. When you said Dutton, I instantly thought Yellowstone. Don't know why. I don't know why either. Our economy is about to be downgraded. Surely this can't keep going on. Or downgraded by, like, the actual, like, Moody's and stuff like that. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Or, like, our gilt, our government bonds, gilt-edged bonds, downgraded, what they're really worth. I don't know. We also say, the UFO files were meant to be out yesterday. Yeah, was that the US government? The US government was saying they were going to release loads more files. Was that supposed to be yesterday and they didn't do it? Is that right? Interesting. I'm interested in disclosure. Or not necessarily disclosure. I sort of suspect the unidentified flying objects we've seen aren't from another star system. I suspect. But who knows? I want to know what they are one way or another. That's what I want. What is it? That Tic Tac. What is that? What was it? I think it's real. Well, it's real, right? It was physically there. What was it? Chinese, Russian, one of America's own projects? Or from another solar system, another galaxy? Who knows? Who knows? I want to know what it is. I want to know what's going on. Don't you? I don't buy Thunderfoots. It's just a bird, bro. It's just all the fast jet pilots making it up for notoriety. Chunderfoot. Blunderfoot, more like. Okay. Rick TWGP says, a Russian frigate escorted a Russian dark fleet tanker right down the English Channel on Monday. Yeah, I think we talked about it on Monday's show. Or was it yesterday's show? Kept that quiet, didn't you, Sir Queer? Yeah, because it's embarrassing, isn't it? It's like, we'll get all aggressive, get all up in Russia's grill, and then when they do something back, you just go, oh, okay, pretend that didn't happen. Yeah. Where's your blockade of their dark fleet, loser? Yeah. I don't know why I don't even see why we have to try and endlessly strangle Russia's economy anyway. I don't really buy that that's necessary in any way. I don't know why their fleet of oil tankers need to be our enemy. Because of the action in the Donbass. Yeah, it's nothing to do with us. It's nothing to do with Great Britain, is it? Nothing. All right. They're the rumble rates. Can we have the super chats? Harry, would you mind bringing up the super chats for me? Okay. Only a few this morning. All right. Brandon Warsfold says, the war with Iran is starting to look like the Suez Crisis. That's interesting. I've talked about the Suez Crisis before, haven't I? At least in passing. At least mentioned it. The Suez Crisis. Yeah, look that up if you're interested. I haven't got a long-form piece of content on it, but I really should do, shouldn't I? I really should do. I'm fascinated by it. Read all about it a bunch of times. It's a very interesting thing. I rarely do things that are post-World War II. I haven't even got that much World War II content. It's much more ancient world and medieval stuff, but I still do 20th century stuff, don't I, from sometimes. Anyone that knows Epochs Inside Out. Should do the Suez Crisis. Anyway, sorry. You're saying the Iran is starting to look like the Suez Crisis. Israel and Britain won on the battlefield, but economic and international pressures forced Britain to withdraw. Will America suffer the same? There is another parallel, isn't there, as well? Where in the Suez Crisis, Britain asked for the United States to help and they refused. I think it was Eisenhower, wasn't it? Ike was the president, I believe. And they refused, and that completely scuppered us. That cut our legs out from under us. We weren't able to do what we want and sort of see the thing through in any sort of long-term way. Ultimately screwed us badly. There's a parallel there, isn't there? America's now leading the action and asking for us to help, and we're like, nah. The big difference is that America doesn't actually need us. We needed America in the Suez Crisis. We needed them. Trump doesn't need Britain, does it? It just doesn't. Okay. Anime Chad Party, great name, said, it would be funny if literally everyone was on welfare. I mean, okay, a certain type of funny. The second one, you also say, maybe it's a bit accelerationist. Yeah, that is accelerationist. I'm not a doomer and I'm not an accelerationist, but I do get where accelerationism comes from. I get the mindset of it. I understand it. Doomerism, I don't. Full-blown defeatism. Doomerism. Those people need to be made to shut their mouths. You can go cower in a basement then, quietly. But accelerationism is something a bit different. I don't subscribe to it. I want as least damage to be done possible to my country and people as possible. But I do understand it. I do get it. You know, we have to pass the idea that we have to pass a certain threshold of how things bad will get before the majority of normies wake up and we get their support for what needs to be done to save the country. I completely, 100% understand that. The idea that if everyone in the country was on welfare, well, the economy would just utterly implode, wouldn't it? So, and I don't want to see that. I know someone like Gavin Bobie, who I deeply respect, I've had on here a number of times, two or three times even, spoken to Gav. The Mosque Buster. Brilliant dude. He's an accelerationist. And his argument he puts forward is you know, it makes sense, it's coherent. You know, I wouldn't call it wrong or insane or anything. I mean, maybe he's right. But things need to collapse to a certain extent, need to, so that we can start the real fight back, push back. Maybe he's right, you know, maybe he's right. I hope not. I want there to be as little damage to my country and my people as possible. That's me. All right. What else have we got? Erwin Romulus. It was nice to meet you on the weekend, dude. You've said, thoughts UTK on May the 16th. UTK. Oh, is that? What is that? Is that Tommy Robinson's thing? Is that what that is? I don't know. I'm in two minds about the expense of going. Seems like it might be a bit of a Sivnat picnic. If that's what it is, I'm not sure. I'm not going to any Tommy things ever again. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in watching some Maoris dance around. Yeah, Sivnat, yeah. Not interested in that. Not interested in that. No. No. Okay. Marcos 588 says, a World War II epochs round table with AM, Furious and Bede. I'd love that. That'd be great. That'd be great. I mean, earlier, just a moment ago, I said I haven't got all that much World War II content. Thinking about that, I've got a fair bit, to be honest. Fair bit. Stuff all about Kursk, stuff all about Market Garden. There's a number of bits and bobs on there about it. Yeah, a World War II roundtable would be great. I'd like that. Okay. And one last thing. Did I talk about the poll? I think we got Ed in earlier. So we didn't talk about the poll. So quickly mention it then. The poll we had today says, does Trump have an exit plan? We're asking you, do you think Trump has got an exit plan? Because Rachel Reeves accused him of not having an exit plan. I don't think he has a clearly defined exit plan, does he? I don't think so. What did you guys think? You thought, oh well, 20% of you say yes, 60% of you say no, and 20% of you say maybe. So that's a firm win for no's. The majority of you guys that voted in that poll think he hasn't got an exit plan. Bit worrying, and if that is the case, bit worrying. All right, that's the show. Apologies, we had to cut off the good professor a little early. We will get him back, though. Okay, so it's now 4 minutes past 9 in the AM. British Summer Time on Wednesday, the 15th of April, in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for watching The Best Among Us. People that tune in live to The Beau Show, Breakfast with Beau, Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club, Beau's Breakfast Club, hashtag The Real BBC. The best people on earth, basically. The best people in the world. Thank you for tuning in, really, though. Without you, it's not a thing. It really isn't a thing. All right, try and make the best of the day ahead. It's the most valuable thing you've got, will ever have, is your time. It's finite. It's probably later than you think. Try and make the best of your days on this earth. You haven't got an endless number of them. If you can, try and make it count. Try and do something valuable with your time. All right, I don't want to get too preachy, do I? Until tomorrow morning, then. Take care.